I guess we all do it. When somebody gives birth, everybody asks them, is it a boy or a girl? What if it's neither?
I have XY chromosomes. Because I don't react to the male hormones that my body makes, it converts it to female hormones, and that's what I react to.
1.5 to 2% of the population is born with an intersex trait.
I was born approximately 2 months premature. They pretty much found out right away that I was different.
The doctors came in and said, oh, there's a problem and it's easy to fix. It'll take a surgery, the kid will never remember it, everything will be fine. Of course, that's not true. It's rarely true. So what happens here in the United States every day?
The medical establishment feels the obligation to impose cultural categories, impose them with a scalpel.
Those doctors think they're doing no harm because they see the harm that comes to a person that's differently gendered as being much greater than anything that could be done medically to our bodies.
The silence on our part make us a greater part of the problem as opposed to part of the solution.
I've kind of embraced being intersex. I've met a whole community of people like me.
If I'd never had the first surgery, I would never have required a surgery in my life.
It is undeniably, unquestionably time to stop cutting the genitals of infants and children just to put them into male-female boxes to placate our cultural discomfort.
Maybe in the case of intersex, it's society that needs to be healed and not us.
We have Megan, and she's beautiful, and she's amazing, and honestly, I wouldn't change a thing. God has a very specific purpose for her, and I'm proud of her. She's not a mistake.
This modern world is of particular interest to women.
Betwixt, at the intersection of faith and culture.
Zero-G and I feel fine.
Hi friends, welcome to the Betwixt podcast, produced in partnership with Missio Alliance, resourcing a church reimagined for a world recreated. I'm Deb Gregory. In today's episode, we talk with Leanne Simon about her experience as a Christian who is also intersexed. Leanne and theologian Megan DeFranza are the producers of the new documentary film Stories of Intersex and Faith. That's the trailer you just heard. Their desire is to bring the courageous stories of intersex persons to churches and communities of faith and to begin the long overdue conversations that might lead to healing and to hope. Leanne is the author of Confessions of a Teenage Hermaphrodite, which is a novel loosely based on her personal story. She's also an advocate for families and children with intersex conditions. And today, we're going to hear her story of coming to terms with a body that was born between male and female. She shares her remarkable story of faith despite experiences of abuse, shame, and invisibility. As a heads up, this episode includes references to sexual anatomy as well as difficult accounts of bullying. But before we get to Leanne's story, let's start with the term intersex. So what is intersex? Well, last year, I interviewed Megan DeFranza for Betwixt Episode 6, Gender Binary and Intersex. Because Megan is a theologian and a gender scholar, I wanted to start off this episode with a clip from that interview in which she unpacks the term intersex.
Intersex is a new term for old phenomena, people whose bodies are born in between male and female, or with male and female, like a mixture of categories. And in the ancient world, sometimes they were called hermaphrodites, so that's a term that people are more familiar with. But it's not one we use anymore, because hermaphrodites were mythological creatures who had like a full set of male stuff and a full set of female stuff and could impregnate themselves, right? And that's humanly impossible. So now we try to be more precise. It's also sometimes called a difference of sex development, so DSD. If you're in the medical community, it's often disorder of sex development, but, you know, most of us don't like to be called a disorder. So intersex is a new term for trying to figure out language that's not pathologizing, that's not othering, to talk about bodies that are naturally born with variations from the majority. So this can be genitals that you're not sure if the baby's male or female at birth, or things you discover later. So the baby looks female, but then you find out that later on when they don't menstruate that, oh, they don't actually have a uterus. Oh, they don't have ovaries, they have testes. Oh, their body has the normal levels of male hormones, but their cells can't process them, something called androgen insensitivity. So you have what looks like a female body on the outside and a male body in some ways on the inside at the chromosome level. And then you can have a baby in some ways the other way, born with typical XX, which is your typical female pattern, but with higher levels of testosterone that would masculinize the female body. Sometimes people will have a mosaic. So some of their cells have an XY and some of their cells have an X and no Y. And so those genes in some ways are fighting against each other. And so you can have a body anywhere on the spectrum between male and female, depending on how that develops in that individual person.
And this is where Leanne's story comes in. Here's another clip from the film.
When I was born, my parents thought I was a boy. I wasn't, but I knew I wasn't a girl either. For my entire life, although the people around me expected me to be a boy, I was considered defective. It was fairly common for my father to tell me that I looked like a girl. For a long time, I thought if I was just obedient enough to my parents and to God, and I prayed hard enough, God would make me a boy. But like Pinocchio, I didn't feel real. Ordinarily, XY results in male, XX results in female. What I have is some of my cells have XY, and some of my cells have just one X. When you have that, you can turn out anywhere between normal male and female with something called Turner syndrome. It resulted in both of my gonads being a mixture of streak ovary and testis, and that resulted in their failure. So I didn't have a normal male puberty. I didn't get facial hair and things that men get. So I couldn't do the things that boys did.
Leanne has a condition called mixed gonadal dysgenesis, and here's where my interview with Leanne begins.
Did you know about your health conditions when you were a child? Did you know that there was something different?
Well, I knew that I was tiny. I knew that I had all these medical issues. I have the facial features that are characteristic of Turner syndrome. If you have looked at very many pictures of kids with Turner syndrome, you'll notice that a lot have this pixie elfin sort of face. Hmm. And I had that. You know, as a child, I knew that I wasn't male and I wasn't female. But what I attributed it to was the elfin face, in my imagination, meant that I was a changeling, that I had been left in place of a human baby. You know, I was so tiny and frail that my parents thought they might lose me. At 2 years old, I weighed 18 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And at age 9, I could wear my 6-year-old sister's dresses. As soon as my health improved, my mom, who was a nurse, took over my medical care so that I didn't have to go to the doctors anymore. And I didn't see one again until I was in college and had an emergency appendectomy.
Wow.
I knew that I wasn't male or female, but we never really talked about it.
Okay.
And my parents never let on that there was anything wrong with me. Mm. My genitals were masculine in shape, but small in size and not functional. So I could not have penetrated or something like that. Now, my parents were, you know, although they raised me nominally as a boy, they were very lenient about gender things. When I asked my mom to teach me to sew, her attitude was, well, that's something a boy can do.
Hmm.
You know, I didn't get punished for getting into my sister's clothes or playing with girls all the time, that sort of thing. Although, you know, I'm not the most feminine woman either. My parents encouraged curiosity and imagination and mostly academics.
Okay.
The very first thing that they told me when I was born was, you're going to college. When, as late as high school, you know, my behavior was clearly feminine, what my parents did was emphasize, nothing can interfere with you going to college. Whatever has to be dealt with has to be dealt with after you get your diploma.
Wow. Okay.
So basically ignore everything, which is how I ended up at age 22 having the sex development of a preteen, because I had dysgenetic gonads, part ovary, part testis. It doesn't mean that I didn't have any development. It just means that I was clearly not an ordinary male.
Hmm.
And I think that perhaps my mom might have just figured that, you know, I'd had delayed growth, I'd had delayed development and everything else. And maybe it was just a long delayed puberty. So when I was 18, you know, they weren't trying to do testosterone shots at that point or anything. Mm-hmm. I first heard the gospel at a vacation Bible school, and I asked so many questions that one of the women took me aside and just started telling me Bible stories and answering questions. I decided that I should be a good girl and obey my parents and love God, but I really didn't understand the gospel.
Hmm. You thought of yourself as a girl at that age. How old were you?
Probably between 6 and 9.
Okay.
I never got very verbal about it, though, because it was clear what my parents expected.
Okay, so it was your internal dialogue. And was it your dialogue with God, too?
It was. I spent a number of years thinking that if I prayed hard enough and that if I tried hard enough, that God would make me a real boy. In high school, there was this Christian boy who shared the gospel with everybody. And he was consistently nice to me. You know, he didn't say, you're too feminine for a boy. And he didn't say, you hang out with the girls, but you never date any of them. You know, he didn't know that I was still wearing my mom's and my sister's clothes. Mm. Instead, he just encouraged me toward a childlike faith in Jesus. And so I went to Southern Baptist Mission, and the pastor there quoted a bunch of verses in Romans and asked me if I wanted to ask Jesus to be my Savior. And I said, well, yeah. I mean, it made complete sense at that point when I understood the gospel. And I felt like, you know, Jesus had been taking care of me for a long time. I assumed at that point that I could be the person that everyone wanted me to be. But instead, the social mechanisms that I had developed to function all crumbled. I felt like my skin had been peeled off, and it was kind of like being naked and finding a video camera, like, you know, people are seeing you naked. And no.
What led you to feeling that way? It sounds very vulnerable.
Well, you know, I thought that I could be the same person inside that I was trying to be on the outside.
Hmm.
And that got reversed on me, that I had to be the same person on the outside that I was on the inside. And also, obviously, become more Christ-like rather than having my entire life revolve around gender.
But the question of gender remained unresolved. Leanne excelled as a student, and so she enrolled in college 1,200 miles away. Soon she found herself living in that cruel domain of a boys' dormitory. They bullied her and made it clear that she wasn't really one of them.
There was a boy who would pin me to the wall or pin me to my bed until I stopped struggling. And then he would usually stop or go a little further, and it was clear that he might go further the next time. My surname at that point was Klett, K-L-E-T-T. Some of the boys called me Clit or Clitoris. One of them scratched Little Queen on my bedroom door. Mm. So I spent as much time as I could in library stacks and walking around campus and just away from them. And I found a warehouse that was where the school kept like old electronics equipment and all of the stuff for the theater, you know, props and clothes. And it had a doorway to the roof and a place, a little patio to sit and stuff. So I'd go up there and study. Since nobody ever went there, I decided one time to wear a sundress and just sit out in the sun and read. And of course, that was the one time that somebody came to get something out of the warehouse, and I had to go see the dean. The dean gave me the choice of counseling or expulsion.
Oh, wow.
If I hadn't had good grades and been an honor student and on scholarship, they probably would have just expelled me. So I cut my hair really short and went to see the therapist. I tested out of enough classwork to graduate a year early. You know, I had my degree, but what was the point? Because my entire life revolved around my inability to function socially or sexually as a male. I still had no real concept of intersex at that point. I just thought, okay, I don't measure up.
After graduating from college, Leanne got a job with a contractor on a naval base, but life on the naval base was challenging. Leanne continued to live as a male, but she was never really quite accepted that way.
So when I wasn't on bases, I was back in Miami working and being reckless on a motorcycle. I got into an accident that might well have killed me. I lay on the road wondering why there's no pain, pulled off my helmet and thanked God for my life. And the response that I got was basically, you can live for Jesus or you can die by your own recklessness. You need to decide before you get up. So I gave in. Which is good. I went to a psychiatrist who referred people to the Johns Hopkins program, which was for gender issues and for intersex. She said that I would need probably a year of therapy before she could refer me there. Of course, this is without a physical exam because she's a psychiatrist, not an andrologist or a gynecologist. She said that the first step in therapy is going to be going to the local gay bar and having a sexual relationship with a man.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was terrified because, first of all, I had no idea what men did with men. Okay? I had sort of an idea what women and men did together, but I'd never done any of that because I was always terrified. I was especially frightened that if I went home with someone who was a stranger, and they found out that I couldn't do what males did, that I wasn't entirely male. I had no idea how they would react. I considered myself a Christian and didn't want to do anything. And I still hadn't started on hormones, so I didn't have any sex drive to speak of. So I didn't go. I didn't go back to talk to her. But I did go to the bar to talk to some people and found out that there was a local endocrinologist who I could at least talk to. And, you know, he didn't do an exam either except to say, don't have much in the way of sex development. He said, I can give you testosterone and we can put you on an exercise program. It won't make you taller. It won't make you different anywhere else. You know, it'll put hair on your body and probably make you bald.
And at this point, you weren't having facial hair or any of those kinds of developmental.
No. And by that time I was 22 and I still didn't have, I actually have some facial hair now, but it's not what a 22, even 17 year old boy would have. It's just what an old lady has. So he said it would have given me a raging sex drive and of course wouldn't have changed my, who that drive would be oriented towards. I said, you know, I don't want to do that. And then he said, well, you know, you wouldn't have any trouble being accepted as a girl, not with my face and demeanor. And so he gave me estrogen, just like that. But the understanding was that I would have surgery eventually to allow vaginal intercourse. The gold standard in intersex treatment is the ability to have a heterosexual vaginal intercourse sort of relationship. That's where the pressure was at that point.
And at this point, you still didn't know about Turner syndrome?
I still didn't have any of the words for it. I knew there was a thing called transsexualism, but most of the people that I met that had that had normal sorts of male bodies. So I didn't really identify with that. You know, I prayed about it and struggled with it and just decided that I couldn't continue with every last breath being associated with that issue, whether it was gender or my body or whatever.
Once on estrogen, Leanne's body began its long-awaited puberty. Her breasts and hips began to develop. She no longer suffered from anemia, and she was beginning to gain some healthy weight. In the midst of this change, she got a call from her sister saying that her parents were divorcing and she needed to come home.
So I go back to North Carolina, to my mom's. I try to tell her that, look, I'm on estrogen. I just tell her the specific estrogen that I'm on, and words fail me, so I don't finish. And an hour later, my sister comes to me and says, what did you tell mom? Because she's on the bed crying. She thinks you're dying of cancer.
Oh, no.
Because apparently ethanol estradiol is what you give someone with late stage prostate cancer or something. So I go and sit on the bed and try to explain what's going on. I go, I don't have cancer. So within 10 minutes, she was supportive and helped arrange all of the logistics of it, you know, like getting the new birth certificate and stuff. The other thing that she said was that for the first time in my life, she knew that I'd be okay.
Wow. How did that strike you when she said that?
Completely encouraging. You know, I had tried so hard and failed. The first time that I went out in public nominally as a girl, I found out that, you know, 98% of people left me alone. And the kind of boys that had wanted to bully me now wanted to bed me. So I just hadn't really gotten that how feminine my face was.
Leanne faced some critical decisions regarding her faith and her body, but the way that her body and her faith intersected made these decisions particularly complex and confusing. Leanne underwent gonad removal and vaginal construction surgery. Now, this was the 1970s, and she found herself in the care of a controversial doctor who performed her surgery in a supply room. She suffered from painful complications, and it would take another 16 years before another surgeon would repair the damage. After 5 years of living as a woman, Leanne finally shared her story with some close Christian friends, but they accused her of destroying her Christian testimony and refused to speak with her again. Leanne felt confused and uncertain about her decision, and so she began dialoguing with a Christian scholar. He told her that if she was truly a Christian, she would want to be a man. Distraught and confused, she worked up the courage to consult her pastor. She submitted herself to the discernment of her church, fully prepared to do whatever they said she must do.
After a while, they came back and said, you're female in the eyes of God's law, and you need to embrace his provision and be content with your body as it is.
Wow.
And you're free to marry so long as the man knows before you marry what your background and history are. That was good for me. But the thing that I think affected me more was the first time that I went to a support group meeting and met other women with similar intersex conditions and some of them with similar histories. And there was even a woman that I met who had been raised as a boy, had mixed gonadal dysgenesis, and was living as a woman, was married. She just seemed really ordinary. I couldn't find anything in myself that condemned her. So I figured that, okay, so, you know, these people aren't freaks, so maybe I'm not either. And then, of course, after I went home, I realized that I can't deny that I have it either.
Meanwhile, a Christian matchmaker introduced Leanne to a man they thought would be a good suitor. Although leery at first, Leanne decided to take the risk and share her story with him.
So I figured, okay, you know, I'll just write a 6-page email saying everything I've ever been afraid of sharing with someone.
Okay.
And he'll go away and leave me alone, or maybe we'll still be friends. And he called back and said that he had cried. And so I started looking at wedding dresses. That was in April. In June, we got married. What he told me was that his diabetes would have more of an impact on our marriage than inner sex. And he was right.
Through all of this, Leanne still didn't have the words to adequately describe her experience. None of the doctors that Leanne visited presented her with a diagnosis, so she began to do her own investigation. Leanne became certain that she had Turner syndrome, but most doctors insisted that the genitals of Turner's patients are unambiguously female. And so she was stuck in this limbo until age 40 when Leanne finally karyotyped, which is that process of analyzing the body's chromosomal makeup. And with her karyotype, Leanne finally was given the words for her experience, mixed gonadal dysgenesis, a mosaic form of Turner syndrome. Her diagnosis led to improved medical care, and as it turns out, her decision years ago to remove her gonads was an important one, because without the removal, it would have put her at elevated risk for cancer. As Leanne grew in her knowledge, she began providing education, advocacy, and support for parents of children with intersex conditions. The group helped each other navigate complex surgical and medical decisions, how to engage with schools and churches, and even how to navigate the bathroom battles. And a few years ago, Leanne partnered with Megan DeFranza to start the nonprofit Intersex and Faith.
Intersex and Faith's mission is to help communities of faith make place for those born between male and female. We hope to do that through advocacy, education, and support. I spent about 10 years answering inquiries for XY Turners, which was a support group that I helped start for the parents of kids with mixed gonadal dysgenesis. I found that most of the parents were pro-life. Quite a few were evangelical Christians. And I wondered why for a little while, but there's such pressure to abort intersex babies that, you know, it kind of makes sense that they would be pro-life. But for a lot of them, their biggest problem wasn't having a child whose sex was ambiguous. It was trying to maintain any kind of relationship with their church.
Oh. What were some of the challenges that they faced with their church? What were the tensions that they were dealing with?
Well, in one specific instance, which is more recently, the child's about to enter kindergarten at the church's school. The sex of rearing is changed a couple of times. And so the child is living as a girl and the birth certificate says male. Christians seem to be more upset about bathroom issues than anyone else on the planet.
Oh.
If an intersex child has to go with a provisional sex on their birth certificate, it means that you're telling the whole school that they're different and that the reason is that they're either transgender or intersex. And most people don't know about intersex, so they're going to assume the child's transgender. And then they're not going to like the mom for forcing the child to live in this wrong sex, right? I mean, that's the direction it heads. The other thing is that Christian scholars tend to reduce the diversity of biological sex to a single parameter. One, for instance, basically says that God's intent is indicated by whether or not you have a Y chromosome present in your system. So even this woman with complete androgen sensitivity syndrome, who might never know that she is not entirely female, except that she's never had a period, he would consider her male. And some reduce it to what's between the legs at birth and say, well, you can't go changing the shape, but doctors change the shape of intersex babies' genitals all the time. And sometimes the parents don't understand that the surgery is not going to fix the child. It's not going to ensure that the gender lines up with it. But they're often not really given a choice. So we end up in overlapping situations with other people in the culture wars. And it's not that unusual as an intersex person to have people assume that I'm in LGBT group. Just because my body. While we do have some concerns that overlap, I still need to be able to talk to conservative Christians and try to explain that, yes, God created mankind male and female and called it good, but there's more in between areas. Genesis doesn't talk about the betweens. It talks about black and whites. And Christians tend to think in terms of the garden and going back to the garden and creational intent. In Matthew, where it talks about marriage being one man, one woman, and lifelong, Jesus refers back to Genesis, where creational intent is man and woman and procreation. But he continues and talks about three different types of eunuchs, basically are going against creational intent. And then he says that one of them does it for the sake of the kingdom. So you can go to the Bible and talk about sex difference, and you can go to the Bible and talk about just grace.
Just grace.
Just because someone's different doesn't mean you have to treat them badly.
Right.
And intersex, I won't get into discussions of whether or not people are born a certain way, but we're all born with Adam's sin affecting us. So I'm not sure that born that way matters one way or the other. But certainly it's like me. If what the Reform scholar said were true, I would have to spend the rest of my life in a hopeless pursuit of masculinity instead of Jesus. So, you know, if someone's intersex or basically anything else, what I'm going to tell them is that you need Jesus. Whatever you've done, whoever you are, whoever you think you are, doesn't matter, because he created you in his image, and because of that, you're worth something.
And boy, that's not a message we hear.
And you know, I've heard very disappointing things out of pastors that I thought ought to know better. I had a pastor tell me that, you know, there's an ontological difference between male and female. That's why homosexuality is a problem. I'm like, well, okay, so what does that make intersex people? If there's a gender soul, then what does that mean to intersex people? I've had several Christians make it a point to tell me that intersex is a result of the fall of mankind into sin, and intersex people really shouldn't exist.
Oh, wow.
So then they'll insist that everybody's going to be male or female in the resurrection. You know, my mom once asked me whether I'd be male or female in heaven, and I told her, you know, I don't know, but I'm sure they won't care because my Redeemer loves me. I also know that, like Job, it'll be recognizably me in the resurrection. It won't be somebody else, it'll be me.
I was flipping through a book called Ethics and Intersex by Dr. Sharon Sistema. She's a biomedical ethicist.
Okay.
And she wrote, intersex people begin their lives in liminality, and they're treated with social and legal sanctions if they do not conform to the gender binary of a dominant society. She's focused primarily on the interventions specifically for children who are intersex. And she said, doctors seek to cure the intersex condition through invasive surgeries hormone therapies, but liminality is never erased by this intervention. It's reinforced through a pathology of medical practices that renders the body of the intersex person unnatural and suspicious even after the intervention. And so there's this sense that we're pushing people toward a cure, but through these kinds of interventions, we restrict the path to the kind of healing that the person really needs, because it communicates that they're not accepted unless they're the thing that we think they ought to be. How does that sit with you?
I think that's largely correct. The same scholar who reduces sex to the presence or absence of a Y chromosome also suggested that intersex people feel alienated to their bodies or have some dysphoria with respect to their bodies or feel uncomfortable about their bodies. I would say, while all of those things may be true, they're iatrogenic. They're a result of external pressures that say, no, you're not good enough, or you're not male enough or female enough. Some people take that to mean that, well, then society should change, and it should. But intersex people still need bodily autonomy or integrity. And we're the ones who need to figure out whether we can fit into this world in a mostly binary way, and which one, or whether we need to embrace the body God gave us. In my case, you know, you have to take hormones to remain healthy if your body doesn't produce them. There's not much question about that. And at that point, it becomes which hormones to take. You need to take all three, probably, testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone, but in different quantities based on what your body wants to do, what you want it to do.
How did you come to accept your body?
Well, for me, my biggest sin, or at least temptation, was wanting something that God had not granted me, which was motherhood, biologically. To a lesser extent, female body. Even to a lesser extent, you know, being fully male probably would have been okay. I think I would have gotten used to it. But it took an understanding of why my body is like it is, and meeting other people with the same sorts of physical issues. As some would say, finding your tribe. An elation fills you when you finally run into someone who understands what you've been through and where you're going. And so one of the things that I would say to any parent of an intersex child is connect with a support group, because you'll find parents who have been through it already. Whether they allowed surgery or not, they can tell you what the results were. They can tell you what the results were if they tried to force their child into a particular gender, or whether they let their child change 15 times in the first 5 years. You know, some kids, it's not even a matter of changing because you don't have to be binary.
What would you say to church leaders and members who need to hear and understand the experiences of intersex people? Those who are ministering with, I guess, well, here's the thing. I think there's a lot of intersex people who are invisible, right? They're in the churches, but they're not able to be open or vulnerable about their experience without feeling a lot of fear, right?
Yeah.
And I think on the flip side, there are a lot of ministers and pastors and church leaders who would love to engage if they knew how. So what would you say to churches who desire to reach out and to minister well to those who are intersex?
I think what I would tell them is that if you're going to write about intersex or about gender issues, you really need to have some sort of relationship with people who are intersex or who have gender issues. And if you want to minister specifically to intersex people, to be able to tell them about God's grace, you need to know not only about God's grace and understand that it's freely offered to everyone, but it would be helpful if you sought out someone who was of your faith and who had an intersex condition, to establish a relationship with them so that you can walk beside them for a while and find out what their real concerns are, not what you would see on the news or on either side in the culture wars, but just a human being that you can talk to and have a friendship with and figure out that, you know, for the most part, they're just like anyone else. I don't think there's any particular magic about it other than being willing to make friendships and to be patient, because an awful lot of intersex people have felt burned by the church. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they may not listen to you where they might listen to me. Mm-hmm. And I would point out to them also that at least half of the intersex people that you're going to come into contact with are children. Parents need your help and patience. Some Christian scholars keep talking about how rare intersex is. I'm not going to argue numbers with anyone, but you are going to run across someone who's intersex, and they're probably not going to tell you, because they're going to assume that how they perceive Christians, that they're not going to be treated kindly by you. So they're not going to open up about it. I haven't told more than maybe one or two people at the church I'm in now, because I haven't been there long enough.
Okay.
My church back in Georgia found out and asked a whole bunch of questions, because they ran across my website and then found recordings of some of the talks I'd given and wanted to know, and, you know, explained to them, and they reacted positively. They said, well, you know, you probably shouldn't lead a double life. You should probably be as transparent in the church as you are out of the church. But they were very supportive. The thing that you have to understand, though, is that most of the leadership in that church had known me for 25 years.
Wow. They knew you for 25 years and they had no idea.
Right.
Was that because you are a private person or because you had some degree of fear?
Both. I was so involved with that church and so in love with the people there that I didn't want to just give that up. One of the fathers of an intersex child who contacted me in the XY Turners group said that when the doctor told him the technical name for his child's condition, which was male pseudohermaphrodite, he had this image of a male prostitute standing under a street lamp. That was his first thought. So when the word intersex comes up, people tend to think LGBT, and then they think about the culture wars. You know, even my church in Georgia, they wanted to make sure that my theology regarding LGBT issues was sound. And I'm like, you know, there's enough other people arguing that I don't want to even talk about it.
That's not the experience you're talking about.
A lot of Christians seem to think that the most important thing is to take a stand. And it's like, well, you take a stand by having the Holy Spirit dominate your life and sharing winsomely the gospel with others.
Speaking winsomely, how would you like to speak to someone who is intersex that's listening to this? Maybe they've never really felt safe to talk to their church or even safe to talk to God about this. What message of hope or healing would you like to share with other intersex families who are struggling to find their place in faith community?
Well, I think I would start by saying that Christianity and the churches that you've been in and the Christians you've met aren't necessarily representative of each other. I would point them to Isaiah chapter 56, where God talks about a eunuch who complains that he's just a dry tree, that he's not going to be able to have any children. And God says, I will give you something better than children if you are faithful to me. And what I would say is that God loves you, regardless of what Christians have done in the name of the Bible or in the name of Jesus. What's important is your relationship with God. If that relationship is good and you're trying to have a relationship with a church, it's difficult. But just letting them get to know you apart from being intersex may help. I don't know. I mean, you know, there are so many different possible situations. If you're intersex and Christian, you really have to be mindful that it takes God's grace to win people over. Not necessarily logic or even theological arguments are going to help. And I would encourage someone, if they're intersex and Christian, we'd love to hear from you, because sometimes it feels lonely. Mm. Perhaps we can put you in touch with someone else that can walk beside you and show you that they're as concerned about it as you are. We'd certainly love to have more people working with us on it.
That is so great, Leanne. Oh, well, thank you so much for taking this time today to talk with me, to share your story, to talk about this film that I think is very important, and I hope will open up a lot of conversations that will be good for us to have.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. It was a delight.
Not only do intersex persons occupy the liminal space between male and female, but they're too often thrust into the middle of the culture wars. Their experiences have been erased by many conservatives in the fight for a binary view of gender, and too often they've served as pawns to progressive political agendas. To use the words of Larisha Hawkins, their bodies have become sites of political contestation. I feel encouraged by Leanne's call for the church to enter the spaces where intersex people have been marginalized, hurt, and abused. There's so much listening work to be done, as well as advocacy work, in reducing the number of unnecessary cosmetic genital surgeries on children. So if you'd like to keep this conversation going, please consider sharing Leanne's story. Intersex and Faith has not only produced a documentary film, but also a discussion guide that's designed for church and community use. You can find links to this and other resources at betwixtpodcast.com.
I threw it all out and
thanks for listening to this episode of the Betwixt Podcast. You can find more Betwixt episodes and view our show notes at betwixtpodcast.com, or you can visit my partners at missioalliance.org. Missio Alliance is resourcing a church reimagined for a world recreated. Thank you to everyone who has subscribed and given Betwixt a positive review on iTunes or Google Play. If you haven't done that yet, please consider taking a minute to help me out. This really is the fuel of podcasts, and it makes a big difference. Special thanks to my friends Rivoli for sharing the music that you hear now. You can check them out at ryvoli.com or Facebook/Rivoli. Hey, it has been a real pleasure to produce this podcast for you. Thank you for holding liminal space with me today. Catch you next time.